south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, so you know, one of the major topics of discussion between expats and gringos and me here in Latin America is, and it should be no surprise to you, how to make some money, find some work, start their own business, whatever. And I'd say right off the bat, around 50% of expats and gringos and wannabes and gonna-bes say they need to or express interest in making some money down here. And as you've heard me say many times before, almost everyone finds something to do, and a lot of times it makes you money. And sometimes, believe it or not, the money part was not the primary reason they get started on something. For expats, it's more about having fun and self-actualization and all that, having a job you actually like. Hey, you gotta do something. You're gonna have a lot of time on your hands. And even if you originally started out with some kind of money-making idea, it almost never turns out to be exactly what you had in mind early on. And most times you end up doing something that you never would have dreamed of. Nevertheless, people are always pumping me for investment and job advice. And what I always say is, the more you have boots on the ground down here, the more your eyes will be open to the fact that there are just tons of niches that people don't even know exist yet, or that are staring you right in the face that need to be filled. Which reminds me of something that happened to me when I was quite young, when talking to my own long-departed dear old dad. By the way, people are always sending me emails saying, Johnny, why don't you tell us a couple of things about your life, about your past? All right, so I won't let out too much, but a few stories here and there ought to fill in the gaps. And here's one of them. Now, when I hit 16, I wanted what every red-blooded American kid wanted, a car. Of course, back then, it wasn't like today, where kids at 16 have the divine right of having a new car in many cases. Yep, a new car, not a used one, and it's got to be a certain one, too. And you know, even 30 years ago, some of that stuff was starting to happen. I remember being in a car dealership looking to buy a basic pickup truck, and I was a bit annoyed. But you know, it was certainly shapes of things to come. I was in the showroom as a squeaking young 16-year-old girl was jumping up and down telling her mommy and daddy that she wanted a certain particular, I think it was a Chevy back then. Yep, it was her sweet 16th birthday present. And at the time I was thinking, someone needs to get slapped here. Not the kid, the parents. I mean, come on, why do you think the millennials today have no idea of the value of things? Anyway, when I turned 16, I wanted a car, and I said to my dad, can I have a car, Dad? And hey, you know, in those days, anything that ran was good enough. He said, sure, I'm 100% behind you. All you got to do is get a job. Then he said, by the way, you have a particular car in mind? I said, yeah. Oh, it'll take a few years to come up with that kind of dough. It's kind of a pipe dream. And he said, well, what's it cost? I said, well, a used one that you have to restore quite a bit. It'll cost around $5,000. And he said, $5,000, huh? Well, what is it? I said, it's a two-seater Mercedes-Benz 1965 280 SL, a classic Mercedes Roadster. Then he said, nice car. But don't you think you should be buying American? Hey, those are the days. Remember that? When Ford, GM, and the American manufacturers wouldn't even let their workers park a foreign car in their lots. Man, how things have changed, huh? Anyway, then my dad said, let me give you a little investment advice. How would you like to turn 10 bucks into $5,000 and buy that car? And that's when that little guy in my head said, Johnny, don't listen. Hey, we've all got a little guy or gal up there that talks to us once in a while, don't we? Anyway, that little guy said, don't listen to him. I know he's your dad, but don't listen to him. Your mom says, never take money or business advice from your dad. He's all jacked up on his credit cards. He's a gambler. Go ahead and humor him, but don't take his advice. By the way, I'm telling you this because he's long gone. And there's a great little story that goes along with the fact that my dad was really bad with money. In fact, I remember in my house, there were almost no arguments except for money arguments. And I remember quite well when I was around, I think, 10 or 11 years old, coming home from school one day, looking at my dad sitting at the kitchen table with all his credit cards cut up into tiny little pieces. And that was the moment my mother took over the finances of the whole family. So my dad was what you might call one of those henpecked husbands who came home with his check on Friday and handed it right over to my mom. And then she'd give him an allowance for the week. Hey, it worked, man. My mom could always come up with the necessary dough for emergencies and stuff without having to borrow. All right, now flash forward maybe 20 years. Now you're going to like this. When my dad died, unexpectedly and young, He was an orderly guy, but he had a very disorganized junk drawer where things, mostly useless things, had a way of accumulating. I think most of us have one of those. Old keychains, foreign coins and adapters and chargers that don't work anymore, and lots of old crumpled receipts and business cards. You know the drill. Most people have a drawer like that. Some people's whole house is like that. So anyway, a month or so after he died, it was, let's clean out Dad's room, send his stuff to Goodwill, and sort things out. That's when one day I came home and saw my ma tearing up a little bit, and it wasn't because of sentimentality, you know? Germans don't cry much, or at least they're good at holding it in. Well, she'd found some disturbing things in his junk drawer. Turns out over the years, he had somehow accumulated some of his own credit cards. You know, back then, they'd hand out credit cards like candy. I remember in college, they'd send me credit cards in the mail, ready to activate. Remember those days? And that was before debit cards even existed. Anyway, my mom had suddenly realized that after the fact, my dad was in debt to the tune of 20 or 25,000 bucks. And that was when 20 or 25 grand was real money. And of course, my mom was now on the hook for that. So that should give you a little idea of how my dad was with finances. And my mom, of course, the exact opposite. But the good news was, and it's really good news, my dad was an easy touch, a box checker. Meaning when junk mail would come with an offer of free stuff or the deal of the century, he'd check the box. You name it. RCA Record Club, Wine of the Month Club, magazine subscriptions, encyclopedias, Franklin Memorial Silver Plates. And some of that junk would infuriate my mom. But it's all good because he also checked the box for credit card life insurance. So yes, for a half hour or so, it was all bad news until we discovered he was suddenly free and clear again. So in the end, he checked the right box. I know I'm rambling here, and you're thinking, what does that have to do with living in Latin America? Well, just stick with me for a moment here. You remember my dad said, how'd you like to turn 10 bucks into 5 grand and buy that car? I said, don't tell me you got a hot tip on the Daily Double at Arlington. He said, no, this is on the level. He said, take 10 bucks, go out to Sears and buy a hair clipper. I said, what? Now, this is before the days of the internet and YouTube, but he said, just start trimming your own hair, it's easy. And he had a buzz cut, by the way. He said, you know, if you cut your own hair, over a lifetime, you'll save at least 5 grand on a $10 clipper investment. And me, being a kind of numbers and mathy guy, I was good at it. Hey, it was something to do, and I didn't much like sports trivia. Anyway, I made the quick calculation, and he was right. You go to the barber once a month, conservatively. You spend 10 bucks, let's say. That's 120 bucks a year saved. Times 50 years, we're being conservative here. And on average, it turns out to be more like 6 grand. Hell of a return on 10 bucks, almost like the early adopters of Bitcoin. And you know what? I did that. Now, today, with so much more affluence in the States than there was way back when I was a kid, or let's say vastly more credit and debt, I think one of the biggest wastes of money and why so many middle-class people are broke by the end of the week is because they eat out all the frickin' time. Hey, when I was a kid, and I know I sound like an old stodgy grandpa, but McDonald's and Kentucky Fried and all that stuff, that was for the weekend, maybe, and special occasions. Of course, if you were a teenage kid and you had a side job, you spent most of your dough on that stuff. Which only proves that Ronald McDonald marketing crap really works on soft young minds. But you knew that already. Anyway, in the end, my dad really did give me one great piece of advice, but being the way he was, he didn't take it himself. And with his buzz cut, would have been a no-brainer. So every week, not month, like clockwork, he'd go to the barber. And you know, when you're a real little kid, your dad often drags you along with him, and that's a real treat. And that's when I discovered why my dad didn't take his own advice. You see, in the back room of that little barber shop, and I think it was true of all retro barber shops of that day, there was a cooler with some beer and a pool table back there, kind of a man cave situation before the term was even coined. And I remember I was not allowed to go in the back room. Why? Because they had girly posters and Playboys back there. And those were the days when the sexual revolution was just cracking open. And most mothers would never let that kind of stuff into the house, even though all their little boys had them hidden under their mattresses. Though I have to admit, there did come a time, I think it was in the late 70s, early 80s, when my brothers and I actually got together and bought my dad a subscription to Playboy for Christmas. And sure, my mom was pissed, but she also knew some people, like me, actually read the articles. Because you see, the literary component in that magazine had become legit. Hell, they interviewed Nobel Prize winners, Linus Pauling, Noam Chomsky, Malcolm X, Jimmy Carter, Ralph Nader, Neil Armstrong even. So my mother, even though she didn't like it, back down, and I'm still surprised she didn't put up more of a fuss. And in a way, part of that subscription was to rock her boat a little too. And I remember her saying, all right, just keep them out of sight. I don't want kids and company seeing them. I don't know, what you call that somewhat typical in American homes back in the 70s and 80s? I mean, that sexual revolution thing really did break the mold, didn't it? But you gotta wonder if it was such a good thing. When you think of the controversy of birth control bills, burning bras, Cosmo, Gloria Steinem, the G-spot, Fear of Flying, remember that book? Man, it seems so lame today, doesn't it? Especially when you've got 51 different gender options, allowing kids in kindergarten to select their genders, and punishing other kids for not accepting that? Meanwhile, you jump on any computer, public or private, and up come those porno windows. I understand even the Vatican's computers are loaded up with that stuff. Though, I imagine, based on their proclivities, it's TNA without the T. Oh, am I glad I'm living in Latin America, because you know what? Much of that stuff has not even arrived here yet. Well, at least not the 51 flavors yet, but the porno pop-up windows. They're here all right. All right, now backtracking a bit to a show I did a couple weeks ago, talking about gold and silver, bringing it down, buying it here or up in the States and trying to have it shipped, whatever. Now, as it turns out, Mexico, Central and South America are loaded with gold and silver mines, and that's why, of course, a half a millennia ago, the crown heads of Europe sent their minions over here to rape, pillage, and accumulate precious metals for the crown. So really, it was gold, silver, and precious metals that drove the conquistadores to kind of wipe out the civilizations here. Pretty sad, but you know, history is replete with those kind of stories. And these days, just substitute the word oil for precious metals. Anyway, because they produce so much gold and silver here in Latin America, in fact, practically any time you're way out in the jungle or the boonies in Central and South America anyway, you'll actually see or hear about local people panning for gold in the rivers. So then, what do you think happens when they recover that gold and silver? It's got to go somewhere, right? And they don't ship it out raw. Well, you know, there are refineries down here in Latin America stamping out gold and silver coins and bullion ingots, too. Just like the US, Australia, China, Austria, and South Africa, etc., etc. Well, some Latin countries do too, including Mexico, Peru, Ecuador, just to name a few. For example, there's a refinery in Ecuador called the Inca Refineria that stamps out different denominations of silver coins. And of course, we're talking about collectibles here and bullion. None of that stuff's in common circulation. They're specialty coins, you know, just like U.S. gold and silver eagles, and Canadian gold and silver maple leaves, too. So what does that mean to gonna-bes, wannabes, and expats with a plan B? Well, that means if you go to any coin or stamp shop here in Latin America, you should be able to buy some of that stuff. Then you won't have to ship anything down, especially when it comes to silver, if that's your game. And you know, I've been a silver and gold bug since my teens. So although I certainly believe cryptocurrencies are the future, I think you have to have a stake in precious metals, too. Hey, I'm not giving investment advice now. I'm just talking about a nice insurance policy here, if you know what I mean. And you know, if you go on OLX.com, of course you have to speak Spanish, or at least read and write it a little bit, you'll often find individuals who have gold and silver to buy or sell. And you'll also see some of that action going on in classified sections of gringo English language newspapers and internet sites. For example, just today, I'm looking at a gringo internet rag coming out of Ecuador, and there's a guy who wants to sell 35 Inca Mint 1-ounce silver coins. Hey, that's a good start, and he wants $800 for them. Now, if you divide that out, it comes out to around $23 a coin. And if you go right now on the internet and check out, for example, a common silver 1-ounce maple leaf from Canada, you'll find you can get those anywhere from around $18 to $20 a coin. Plus shipping, so let's say $21 or $22 a coin. So you're right in the ballpark there. However, you have to know one thing. When someone's advertising that they're going to sell some gold or silver coins, I don't care where they are, it's usually because they're in a kind of a desperate spot. So you know they need the cash. So that means they're more than willing to bargain with you. In fact, if I was in the market to buy these 35 Inca 1-ounce coins from this guy, I'd just go to the internet, pull up one of the usual suspect bullion sites and show them the spot price of a silver Canadian maple leaf or panda, whatever, and say, look, silver is silver, that's what I'll pay for them. Or not. Now, you've heard me say it's a bad idea to ship silver down for a lot of reasons, mostly for the weight, but all is not lost because they mine silver like crazy here in Latin America, especially South America and Mexico. So here and there, you will find sellers. Just gotta kind of keep your eyes open. Oh, and by the way, when you're buying little hoards of silver or gold coins and the seller tries to tell you that they're worth a lot more than spot value because they're a special strike or a limited edition or from the Franklin Mint or some crap, to me, that just means that person got taken when he bought them. Because you know what? When the crap hits the ventilator, no one's going to give a damn about the dates or the limited editions. They're going to care about one thing, the content of raw silver or gold in the coins. Fact is, I've been a coin collector for a long time, since my teens, and I'll tell you this. In times of chaos and trouble, when the crap hits the ventilator, nobody cares about the blue book or the red book value of your coins because of their scarcity. What I'm saying is there will not be a collector's coin market. It'll be a coin market based on only the pure meltdown value of the silver or gold or platinum, palladium, whatever, in those coins or ingots. So, quoting the famous words of that great philosopher, Mike Tyson, quote, "Everyone's got a good plan until he gets punched in the face." Mike Tyson, philosopher? Who'da thunk, huh? Anyway, then I suppose after a while, who knows how many months or years, after the lemmings and non-believers have all gone over the cliff, and things come back to somewhat normal, and maybe they never will, the collectible market will return. Which reminds me of another fine saying. Intelligent people are full of doubts. Stupid people are full of confidence. Charles Bukowski said that, and man, could that guy drink. Isn't it funny how drunks and madmen are sometimes the best philosophers? I mean, look at the Irish. Oh, and speaking of OLX.com, I really like that site. It's in practically every Latin country now, and it's more than a Craigslist, believe me. And it's free for the basic service anyway, and whatever you've got to sell, you can upload 5 or so photos and have an active chat going with anyone who's interested in bargaining and dickering with you. That way you can sift out the tire kickers and such. Not only that, if your Spanish really does suck, then you could use any translator app and cut and paste. Then you can still have a reasonable ongoing chat with the Spanish speaker you're dickering with. And on the subject of learning your Spanish, got a short email from a repeat offender at one of my previous seminars. He's back here in Central America now. He says, "Johnny, at our hotel room right now, the World Cup is going strong." Yeah, yep, that's right. All the fanatics are out there yelling, "Goal, goal, goal," and all the bars are packed. And all the Latin guys are drunk, and the Latin ladies you see in those places are only there because if they didn't pretend to like soccer, their men would be AWL for weeks. Anyway, William says, "Johnny, of course the World Cup's all announced in Spanish. But after a while I'm thinking, how do these Latinos living here not get a headache from yakking in Spanish all day long? I know, that's the effect it has on us gringos." Well, thanks for that, Bill. And you know, there is something to be said about that. It's true. As you're learning your Spanish, you're trying to pick out the important phrases and such when people are speaking. Man, at first, it really is hard work. At least it was for me. Because by the time you've figured out one little phrase that seems important, more than likely that Spanish speaker you're trying to converse with is miles ahead of you. And you're still trying to suss out something he said two paragraphs ago. Hey, I feel for you, Bill. I've been there. But one day, believe me, if you keep going at it, even after you've thrown in the towel a couple of times, something will click in your brain, even if it's for 3 minutes. You'll have an apocalyptic moment for that 3 minutes, and you'll actually start thinking in Spanish. Do you know how we've got this ongoing conversation going on in our heads all the time? I mean, we're talking to ourselves, and we can't stop. Everywhere you go, every move you make, with every shift of your body, your eye movements, we've all got this ongoing conversation going on with ourselves in our heads, right? You do have that going on, don't you? Or is it just me that's on the edge of madness? Well, I think it's happening to most of you, and it's always in English, right? But like I said, if you keep at it, there will be a moment when suddenly you're actually thinking and talking to yourself in Spanish, and it'll be automatic. Hey, and it's me, Johnny, telling you this now from my own experience, and I'm a complete language dunce. Took me a good 5 years before it started to click. Of course, the first 2.5 years didn't count because I was in Costa Rica and nobody wants to speak Spanish to you there. Why? Because there's no tourism dough in it for the locals. So, as for me, it took me about 2.5 years, 100% off the gringo tourist trail, to get my Spanish to kick in. Not counting that 2.5 years wasted in Costa Rica. And you know, I still write texts and emails and compose letters in Spanish like a fourth grader. But the point is, with perseverance and as long as you're somewhat off the gringo tourist trail, it'll happen to you. Then again, I know so many gringos and expats who've been down here for years whose Spanish absolutely sucks. They've got 20 or 30 words down. And it's not that they're particularly lazy or unmotivated. It's just that they're on the gringo tourist trail. All right, speaking of Spanish, which everyone wants to speak but most can't, I want you to listen to some excerpts from an article that kind of tells it like it is regarding expats learning Spanish here in Latin America. All right, first, some background. It says roughly 650 million people speak Spanish as their first or second language. And Spanish is the native tongue in 21 different nations. And believe it or not, it says It's the second most popular business language in the European Union. Then it says, unlike all of the other European languages, like German, French, Italian, etc., the number of people speaking Spanish in the world is growing rapidly, whilst the others are stagnating. And whether you like it or not, in the U.S., Spanish is the second language spoken by 40 million people. Now, that's more than doubled since 1990. How'd that happen? And it says, right now, there are 6 million American students studying it in high school and college. And get this, the U.S. has the world's largest Spanish-speaking community outside of Mexico. That's even larger than in Spain, the mother country where the language originated, where they've got 47 million people. Then it says, if you're thinking about or planning to move anywhere in Latin America and have a hope or a prayer of communicating with most of them, some knowledge of Spanish is essential. Problem is, there's no secret key to unlock the door to Spanish. And if you think you're going to speak like the locals anytime soon, that's just not going to happen. And then it says, a lot of people use Rosetta Stone. But that won't do it for you. Nor will the other computer and audio programs, grammar textbooks, verb workbooks, dictionaries, and phrasebooks. Nor will those internet Spanish sites or daily e-letters. Nor private lessons with native speakers and intensive immersion classes at language schools and watching movies with subtitles and telenovelas, soap operas. Nor will listening to Spanish talk radio or using Google Translate help much either. The thing is, for us gringos, in the end, it's all about the hours and the determination you put into it. Now, of course, there are always some gifted linguists out there who pick up things extremely fast. Don't you hate those people? But alas, if you're listening to this, you're probably not one of them. The truth is, all those aforementioned vehicles in helping you learn Spanish, no matter what they promise, are just beginning steps. A lot of them baby steps. Because it takes old-fashioned sweat and tears to study and actually learn how to converse. It also requires overcoming your initial intimidation and embarrassment at sounding dumb when you speak. Boy, we've all been there. But thankfully, native Spanish speakers are not like the French. Because you see, native Spanish speakers are very forgiving and will help you along, and always with a smile. Whereas with the French, sometimes you just want to slap them. And tell them that civilized people take baths more than once a week and trim their nose hairs too. By the way, that goes for Greek men too. So have we offended enough people yet? All right, me Johnny here again. You know, I'm kind of injecting my two cents in here and there without saying it's me. You're kind of getting that, right? Okay, let's press on. Then it says, you have to accept and be patient with the feeling of being lost for quite a while, maybe years. Finally, only by talking to everyone you come in contact with and listening hard and not being ashamed or feeling stupid to question what you don't understand, even if it takes 10 repetitions, then, and only then, will you start seeing some progress. Now, some people take what you might call a no English pledge. They say, I'm not going to speak English at all today, which includes not even thinking in English, which almost never works because you can't force yourself to think in another language. It's going to come when it's going to come. But the thing is, when you finally achieve an ability to communicate at whatever level, however haltingly, there's no feeling of accomplishment quite like it in the world. But then, of course, you'll backslide. And there's no faster way to backslide than to hang out with gringos or go back to the States for a couple of months. However, when it clicks, a whole new world expands exponentially right before your eyes. Now, the good thing about learning Spanish is it's not like learning Russian or Chinese, where alphabets are pretty much completely different. Sure, Spanish has accents and a couple of extra letters and vowels thrown in, but the cool thing is the Spanish language is almost perfectly phonetic, with the exception of a couple of silent letters thrown in, which is more than you can say for the English language, which in only some cases is phonetic. Not to mention you have a huge head start on vocabulary because English and Spanish cognate with each other with many similar words, especially when they're scientific. And the same goes for modern, recently added words and technical words like computer, computadora, electricity, electricidad, television, televisor, cell phone, celular, and of course every North American is completely fluent in the Taco Bell menu. So you got that going for you. Now, people always say it's so much easier to learn a language when you're young because your brain is more plastic. That's true. For example, here's an email from a gringo who's been living in Ecuador for 10 years. He says, I've studied privately with tutors 5 days a week for 6 months. I've taken several group courses, tried Berlitz, Rosetta Stone, Spanish Made Simple, and a number of books. After 10 years, I can certainly get across what I want to say, but believe me, I could not carry on a conversation with the average Spanish speaker on the street. So am I just thinking ahead? No, I was a National Merit Scholar and Dean's List in the U.S. for many, many years, so I'm not stupid nor lazy. So just know, if you move to Latin America, even giving it your best shot, you still might never be fluent. All right, it's me, Johnny, again. The problem here is Ecuador's loaded with gringos. This is a problem if you're trying to learn your Spanish. Then here's another guy in Ecuador. He says, look, I got tired of not being able to speak Spanish to the people down here. So for nearly 3 years, I've been using online Duolingo, Spanish Dictionary, Madrigal Spanish, Primsleurs, Spanish for Dummies. I recently added online Babbel, and I have tried Fluencia. I am now over 50% fluent, and my spelling is far better in Spanish than in English, I think. So am I language retarded? No. My PhD was in special ed, and it took me 3 years to be 50% fluent, and I feel good about that. So really, there's no excuses for anyone not to learn Spanish. And the benefits, he says, are priceless. Then we got another guy from Ecuador says, the problem is, it's difficult here in Ecuador, especially Cuenca, where you can get by reasonably well by speaking only English. It allows us to be quite lazy. And it's a big handicap because you'll never be able to truly communicate with the locals and get involved with their lives and the community. The problem is, he says, everyone falls back on that excuse. It's much more difficult to learn Spanish at an older age. But the problem is, we always seem to find groups of other gringo friends to hang out with, and we all sit around and talk, in English of course, about how it's so difficult at our ages to learn Spanish. And finally, this older gringo lady pretty much says it all. Get this. Man, I've heard this one a million times. What a lame excuse. Now, she says, look, I've studied Spanish 5 days a week for 6 months, and guess what? I couldn't travel. I couldn't socialize or shop or join clubs or do things with my gringo friends because I had to be home every day with my tutor. I came to realize that I wasn't getting any younger and the life of a student wasn't what I came down for here in my retirement age. That doesn't make me lazy. It makes me practical. All right, me Johnny here. And you know, up in the States, you hear all these Native Americans complaining that Latinos who migrate to the States don't or don't want to learn English. Well, look who's calling the kettle black.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.